Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of From My Point of View. We have the ALCS and the NLCS upon us. The Rangers already jumping out to a 2-0 lead against the Houston Astros, winning both games in Houston. They get to go back to Arlington to try and lengthen that lead, already up to nothing. Very, very, very impressive. An unbelievable outing from Montgomery in Montgomery and Eovaldi in the first two games. And with the NLCS, we are heading into game two tonight. As I'm recording this, it's game two is tonight, and Philly up 1-0. Zach Wheeler throwing a gem in game one. The offense, the big bats came to play for the Phillies. Three solo home runs from Castellanos, Harper, and Schwarber. Schwarber, first pitch swinging. Bottom of the first pitch off Gallen, launches one into right field. So they roughed up Gallen a little bit. And I wrote about it. You can read it on animalhouseusa.com. But I just think this is where it's like the Diamondbacks, they run into a buzzsaw. The Rangers still have not lost. So that's pretty impressive. They're 7-0 at this point. Very, very, very impressive. They won 2-0 against the Rays in Tampa Bay. They won two games in Baltimore and then one in Arlington to sweep the Orioles 3-0. And now they just won two games in Houston, going back to Arlington now. Just really, really, really impressive run so far from these Texas Rangers. They have not lost. As I said, the Diamondbacks suffered their first loss at the hands of the Phillies, who are just scorching hot. So MLB playoff baseball, NFL week six. And I actually went to my first New York Comic Con, which is pretty cool. I haven't really been talking much about like pop culture stuff on this podcast recently. Let's dive into that first. Just slice of life content, you know. But with that, you know, I haven't really been doing much. There aren't really movie reviews. The last movie I went to go see was like almost 3 months ago now. It was the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie. Very good movie, but of course, as I'm sure a lot of people are well aware, there is the writer's strike and the actor's strike affecting, you know, contracts and all that, and they're fighting for better wages, better health coverage, trying not to have like their likeness used without their permission, trying to get AI out of the equation, and the movie studio executives suck. So it's been brutal, just in general. And now we're really starting to suffer the after effects of the strike it's been going on like 6 months now, which is just insane. But, now it's like there's nothing really coming out. Like there's no new things coming out. There is so many things being delayed, right? So I just haven't really been talking much about that. I've been watching, you know, my anime and stuff like that on Crunchyroll, whatever. But New York Comic Con, right, was able to still be in full flourish and everything. I went in there. First time I went Friday. I got there around 12:30. Walked around and was just like, it was awesome. So much stuff, and it was so many things to look at and explore. And you're just like a little overwhelmed. You know, it took me a little bit to kind of calm myself and you know, be able to navigate in my brain, like where I want to go first, what do I want to look at, you know. And I found myself definitely walking in circles and going back to different booths and different areas of the floor to kind of look at things again and pass people by and all these people with these fantastic costumes and cosplaying. And it's just a really, really fun environment. Everyone there likes the same thing as you, you know, and you're with a bunch of people who enjoy all the same stuff as you. And they're all really passionate and everyone's just there having a good time. You know, it's a really good environment to be in. I won a lightsaber, like a prop lightsaber. That was pretty cool. I was at one of those booths with the lightsabers that have like, they have like the customizable hilts and different colors, and they all make like those great sound effects. And all of those good ones are like between $200 and $500 basically, which I wasn't really going to buy any of those. But on the back end of that booth was a guy sitting at like a table with this little scanner, and people were scanning their, you know, their tickets that you had to wear around on the lanyard on your neck. And it was just like scan for a chance to win a free prop lightsaber from them. And I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. And I watched, you know, four or five people go in front of me, scan their thing and fail screen comes up. And in my head, I'm like, wow, this is something that's like, you could just put this out there and people are going to scan it because it's like, why not? You know, why not just scan it for free? If you win, you win. But like, people could sit here and scan this all day and no one's ever going to win. Like, it's rigged. You know, that's what I'm thinking in my mind. And of course, I scanned my card and I won, which is like the funniest. That's the craziest thing ever. Just like, of course, it's me, right? That stuff never happens. But really fun. Got a cool light, little prop lightsaber. Not little. It's normal size from like the lightsabers that you can get. But it's cool. Just like a standard black hilt. It's orange. It looks like a creamsicle. So I didn't get to pick any of the colors or anything. He just gave me a random one out of the box. So that was sick. Yeah, really fun. Got some mystery boxes with stuff in them. I went to a couple panels with the English voice actors for Mikasa and Eren Jaeger from Attack on Titan. I went to that panel. I went to like a My Hero Academia panel where it was like the debut of like a filler episode, which was kind of like whatever. Honestly, I thought it was going to be something else, but that's all right. it was still nice. I got this sick shirt. You could see it's a Crunchyroll, like My Hero and the NBA. I'm showing it. I don't know if I'm ever going to use this footage, but whatever. It's Chicago Smash. And then on the back is like All Might, which is pretty sick. Really like that. Really like this shirt. I bought it. It was awesome. Actually, really good quality too. So sick shirt. I got that. I bought a Gundam. I bought the Gundam Wing. Gundam. Action figure, I guess, model, whatever you want to call it. And you have to build it. And they, you know, I've always wanted one of those. Mobile Suit Gundam Wing was the Gundam franchise that was airing. I don't know if it was reruns or not, but I remember seeing it late night on like Toonami. Mobile Suit Gundam Wing was that's the point in the franchise that Gundam was at. And I always loved the main Gundam in Mobile Suit Gundam Wing with like this green emerald on the chest and just like the sickest helmet and the wings and the sword and like, oh my God, the shield, the giant shield, super sick. Always wanted to build a set of it. I'm halfway done with it. I have the entire lower body built already, which was really cool. They're pretty small, but like you get to like, you know, they come in like sheets of all these different parts and you have to like clip them out, put them together. It's like it's really like pretty complex. Like you build the entire, you know, inside and then put on the armor plates and everything and it all comes together and it's really, really cool. So I'm excited to continue to build that. But I went to so many booths and I took so many pictures of people and it was really, really, really just a fun experience. And you know, I was explaining to my girlfriend about how like everything pop culture is there. Like basically everything. You can dress up as whatever pop culture, you know, character you want. It's not really like the only thing I would say is like, if you're the only thing that's not included, I would say is TV shows and movies that don't have any like fantastical elements to them are not going to be there. But like, other than that, you can like anything that's sci-fi fantasy related or like anything with some type of fantastical elements, doesn't matter if it's an anime, animated cartoon show, an animated movie, live action movie, live action TV show, whatever it is, if it has some type of fantastical element, it's probably going to be represented in at Comic-Con, either from a booth, from, you know, people cosplaying, whatever it is. It's pretty awesome. So I loved it. I'm definitely going to go again next year. Maybe I'll go on the Saturday, because the Friday was packed, but like the Saturday, I can only imagine is probably even more hectic. Which now that I say that out loud, kind of sounds like it would be worse, because it was like the perfect amount of packed on Friday. So I was happy with that, but super, super fun. Really enjoyed myself. And that, you know, again, you're there with a bunch of people who all love the same thing as you. Everyone is really into anime and these fantasy TV shows and, you know, all these other things. There's Dungeons and Dragons stuff. There's, you know, everything. Dragon Ball, One Piece, of course. Naruto, of course. Jujutsu Kaisen. All the anime, popular anime, a lot of Demon Slayer, of course. And then also, you know, superhero stuff. There's Marvel and DC and Star Wars. All the stuff that everything pop culture-wise that I love is, like, represented at this place. And it's just, you really kick yourself sometimes. Like, how have I never been there before? And I'm 27 years old now. It's like, this is something I definitely would have enjoyed when I was still, you know, 22, 23, 24 years old. I can't believe it took me so long to get there, but yeah, it was a lot of fun. Enjoyed myself. It was great. It was great. I would recommend anyone that has any interest in any of those things, no matter how much, if you're a diehard, if you're like casual, if whatever, if you like it, you should go, because it's a great experience. Okay, MLB playoffs. We had the whole recap and a little bit of a preview last week. So now the game started. Game one of the ALCS was Sunday after football and late Sunday afternoon. The Rangers shut down the Astros. They shut them out at home and they win 2-0. The starting pitching, Jordan Montgomery for the Rangers, Verlander for the Astros. And honestly, like, Verlander pitched really well, and normally going 6 2/3 and giving up 2 runs would generally lead the Astros to victory, but Jordan Montgomery and the Rangers were just a little bit better than the Astros were able to muster up. Montgomery went 6 1/3, so he actually pitched one out fewer than Verlander, funny enough. But he went 6 1/3, 5 hits, no runs, 6 Ks, 1 walk. Verlander went 6 2/3, 6 hits, 2 earned runs, 5 Ks, 2 walks. The only 2 runs he had, gave up a single to Jonah Heim in the second for an RBI single. And then in the fifth, a solo home run to Tavares. And that was it. That was the scoring for the entire game. So a run in the second and a run in the fifth. And the Astros couldn't do anything. So I did say that, you know, Texas's bullpen has been a problem kind of all year. And that was really going to be the thing. Like, if they could step up and have that work for them, then that was going to be something that can really help them out. Max Scherzer coming back from his injury. He was ruled out of the playoffs, but now they've made it so far. He's had enough time. He's really worked hard to come back from this injury that was really deemed for him to be basically out for the rest of the year. And here he is. Bruce Bochy announced Scherzer to be the starter in game 3, which is going to be tomorrow night, Wednesday night. They haven't announced a starter for game 4 or anything, so they're just looking at game 3. Back home for the Rangers, Scherzer is going to be the starting pitcher. I cannot imagine he goes more than like 4 innings. I mean, I know he's like a big competitor and he's going to try and push it as far as he can go. But I think it would serve the Rangers so much better if they just threw him out there to be an opener for like 2 to 3 innings and then have maybe another long reliever come in, or maybe like a back end starter that they had come in, pitch 3 more innings. Then they go to the bullpen. Like it's definitely risky, but I can't imagine Scherzer is going to be the guy that's going to come in and he's going to like try and throw 6 innings. That feels like way, way, way too big of an ask. And also, you don't want to get him re-injured on this. You want him to be around. You want him to be healthy for this playoff run, because if you get past the Astros now, which you have a really good chance to because you're up 2-0 already, if you get past the Astros, you're in the World Series. Scherzer is going to be a huge part of that. Like, even if he's not starting, you know, consistently, like every 2 days or whatever it is, every game 3, he's not starting, right? Even if he's not doing that, he can come out of the bullpen late. He can provide that late game support for the Rangers. I think they're going to be super cautious with him in game 3. I think them announcing him as the starter is kind of almost like a mental warfare play where it's like, yeah, he's good enough to start. He's not going to be coming out of the bullpen. He's not going to be coming in late situations. He's going to start against you guys. So like, watch out. I think that's kind of maybe what they're going for, Texas. Cause again, I can't really see Scherzer going out there and dealing for like 5-6 innings. I really can't. You know, he was a long shot to be activated for the roster, and then now he's here. I just can't see them pushing him that hard. But I digress. That's game 3. That hasn't happened yet. Game 1, again, great pitching performance from Jordan Montgomery. Great pitching performance from Justin Verlander. It's just that the Astros bats could do a whole lot of nothing. And then Monday night was game 2. The Rangers jumped out to a early 4-0 lead in the first inning. They scored one more run throughout the game, and that came in the top of the third, and that's all they needed. So they were up 5-1 early. The Astros continued to chip away. They put up 1 in the second, 1 in the fourth, 1 in the sixth, 1 in the eighth, and just ran out of innings. So they were chipping away. They were getting a run across the board every other inning, but they just ran out of time. They ran out of innings, and the final score, 5-4, Texas wins. They hold on. Eovaldi, a great performance from him. Again, the guy rises to the occasions in the playoffs time and time again. We've seen it several times. We saw when he was with Boston, and now we see it. We see it now. He's 3-0 in these playoffs. 6 innings, 5 hits, 3 earned runs, 9 strikeouts, and 1 walk. Framber Valdez, he only went 2 2/3 innings for the Astros. 7 hits, 4 earned runs, 6 strikeouts, and a walk. So, Valdez is actually 0-2 in these playoffs. So he struggled for the Astros. That's been really tough. But this lineup, just the Texas starting pitching is really, really holding up well and dominating. Jordan Montgomery, the big lefty, and then Nathan Eovaldi have just been like balls of steel, really. They've been lights out. Texas, I can't believe they still haven't lost. Like, this is you talk about being hot. Like, everyone in this lineup is hitting. They're getting timely hits. They're getting great starting pitching. Good base running. They're hitting the long ball. Like, Corey Seager is maybe the best baseball player on the planet right now. Yeah, his average and OPS in these playoffs are just mind-boggling. They're so ridiculous. In this postseason with Texas, he's batting .348 with a 1.1 over 1,000. It's 1.168 OPS. He has been just on an absolute tear. He only has 1 home run, but 3 RBIs, 11 walks, 3 doubles in 7 games. Like, he is just he's always on base. He's always having good hard at bats. Just he feels just impossible to get out right now. He has been absolutely tremendous. And the Rangers lineup just in general, Adolis Garcia, you know, Marcus Semien, everyone in that lineup, Josh Jung, like they've all been playing really, really good baseball. And I think that the Rangers right now, I mean, it's gearing up to Rangers Phillies. I would really like that. And I don't really know who I would want to win more in that series, to be honest. That's kind of like the Phillies. I don't generally like Philadelphia and I don't really generally root for Philadelphia, but I do like Bryce Harper. I do like JT Realmuto. You know, I like Trey Turner. I like Bryson Stott. Like they're players that I enjoy watching. Castellanos, of course, is always the butt of a joke when he hits a home run because of the whole, you know, bad luck thing. And then he hits a home run. It's pretty funny what that's turned into. But the Phillies are like, they're electric. You know, they really are electric. I would like to see Bryce Harper get a ring. You know, as much as some people don't like Bryce Harper, I do. And I do like Bryce Harper. I think he's a fun player to watch. And he just feels like he delivers all the time. Like he deserves a ring. But then you have the Rangers who have never won a World Series, which is just like insane to me that never has happened to them before. It's never happened. And then I remember, you know, like 10 years ago, they went to back-to-back World Series and lost both. Brutal. I mean, they had like I think they lost pretty convincingly to the Giants, but then had like that complete meltdown to the Cardinals with David Freese and that whole, you know, story that unraveled. That was crazy for them. And just heartbreaking. So back-to-back World Series, they haven't been back since. They lost both. Like that is gutting, you know, because there's been teams that go to back-to-back World Series, they lose one and then they win the next. Like the Royals, I remember, did it. They also lost to the Giants and they go back next year and they beat the Mets. So it's like they do deserve, like this team is really, really good. And they don't even have DeGrom and Scherzer, which like if those two guys were healthy, who knows? Like this, they'd be steamrolling, cruising. But really, really good from them. I mean, they've been tremendous. Let's see how long they're back home now. They won the first two games on the road against the division rival Astros. So now they're back home. We'll see where they go. The NLCS, the Phillies, I think the Diamondbacks have finally just run into that buzzsaw. Game one, it's Bryce Harper's 31st birthday. I suck at betting because any smart person would bet Bryce Harper to hit a home run in the playoffs on his birthday. Like, of course he's going to hit a home run, which he did, of course. Schwarber and Harper homered in the first. Castellanos in his first at-bat in the second inning also homered. Harper also had an RBI single in this game. The Diamondbacks put some runs on the board late with a Perdomo home run. And then Alec Thomas hit a sacrifice fly. So the Perdomo home run was a two-run homer. And then Alec Thomas hitting a sac fly. 5-3 in the seventh, but that's all that the Cardinals could muster up. That Phillies bullpen coming down and shutting it down after that. So Zach Wheeler, great pitching performance again from him. Aaron Nola will be pitching game two tonight, Tuesday night. So both of those guys, like much like the Rangers with Montgomery and Eovaldi, those two guys in the rotation have just been flat out dominant, really, really good starting pitching from the Phillies with Wheeler and Nola. I just think that in terms of, you know, hot streaks sometimes can only carry you so far in baseball until you're just simply outmatched. I mean, in the case of the Phillies, not only do they rival like with Kelly and Gallen, right? Those are two great starting pitchers for the Diamondbacks. But in terms of like where you match up, like Wheeler and Nola, there's no significant difference, if any at all. Honestly, like if you ask me, I'm still giving the starting pitching edge to Wheeler and Nola over Gallen and Kelly. So in that regard, it's like you have starting pitching on your side, and then you know, the Diamondbacks can score runs. We saw that in the series with the Dodgers. Like, they can put up runs. They can. But at the same time, you're not going to win a slugfest with the Phillies. It's just not going to happen. And they've been, I mean, Harper, Castellanos, and Trey Turner have just been absolutely on fire this entire postseason. They're all batting around 350 or higher. I think Trey Turner's batting like 500 during this postseason. He's been a freak, constantly gets on base. Harper just seems like every time he's at the plate, every pitcher is scared because he has been jumping all over mistakes this postseason. That's when you know you're really locked in as a baseball player, is that one mistake, like you have to, every pitch has to be very careful. You have to be incredibly delicate and you have to put it in the right spot, because if you miss a couple inches inside, a couple inches outside, whatever it is, like Harper's either going to draw a walk, or if you make that mistake and you have to get it inside and it's too far into the middle of the plate, he's going to crush it and he's going to hit a home run. That's what he's been doing these entire playoffs so far. You have to pitch to him smart. You have to pitch to him very carefully. And if you make one mistake, he is all over it. He's putting the bat on the ball and hitting it hard every single time you make a mistake. So it's been really fun. Castellanos, same thing, by the way. I don't want to leave him out, because he's just been scorching hot, home run after home run after home run with him. And like the fact that this dude's batting in the bottom third of your lineup, he's batting seventh in this Phillies lineup, which is just incredible. The depth that this team has right now and the consistency that they have right now going into this, that Castellanos is batting seventh in your lineup, that's dangerous, man. That is so dangerous. And I just don't know if the Diamondbacks have that kind of firepower to keep up with them. And I mean, they've never been here before. They're a young team. Like, the pitching is good. They can score runs, but I just think the Phillies are on a mission, man. They really are on a mission. Before we get into NFL Week 6, just a bit of trade news, I guess, if you want to call this a trade. Kevin Porter Jr. got traded from the Rockets to the Thunder, and the Thunder are immediately waiving him. So basically, this is the trade summary. The Thunder get Kevin Porter Jr., two second round picks. The Rockets get Victor Oladipo and Jeremiah Robinson Earl, and then Kevin Porter Jr. will be waived immediately. So basically, the Thunder are paying whatever Kevin Porter Jr., $16 million or whatever it is on Kevin Porter Jr.'s contract for this last year. They're paying that basically for 2 second round picks. They're paying $16 million for 2 second round picks because they're waiving Kevin Porter Jr. And he's still facing assault charges and everything. So, yeah, he might be done in the league. All right. But yeah, whatever. Sorry, my Kevin Porter Jr. dreams are over, I guess. The kid's done. But NFL Week 6, let's start with Sunday Night Football. The Giants and the Bills, 16.5-point dogs for the Giants with Tyrod Taylor as the starting quarterback for that night. And they have a chance to win at the end of the game. So before we get to the end of the game, I just got to give so much credit to the defense. Like, I think the Giants, they lose this game and they're 1-5, but like, I really think the defense has been playing well, all things considered. I mean, like, you have a strong defense with, like, you have against Miami 1 week, like, they have a pick six. They, you know, they keep it relatively close. It's just that the Giants can't move the ball offensively. And then you come back the next week against Buffalo again. You're winning basically the entire game because your defense is keeping you in it. You can't score a touchdown. Giants kicked 3 field goals. And at one point they were winning like 9-0, whatever it was. And they couldn't figure it out. They could not figure it out. And they can't put the ball in the end zone. But the defense, they held you in there until the very end. The defense held it in there to the very end. Tyler Bass misses what would have clinched the game for the Bills. It would have made it 17-9, which I guess technically not clinching, because the Giants would then have to score a touchdown and then convert a 2-point conversion, which is a lot better than just if the Giants scored a touchdown, they won the game. So He missed 2 50-plus-yard field goals, Tyler Bass, which usually he's pretty money on, but he missed a 51 and a 53, I think it was. So that gave the Giants some life. They drove down the field. They got a huge pass interference penalty in the end zone. And they get the ball at the one. And they run a play that I hated. It's a quick play action play where Tyrod Taylor then tried to loft it over the top. I think Johnson on the Bills, number 7, he read it perfectly, stayed with Waller, did not bite on the play action, stayed with Waller as he leaked out to the back of the end zone. It wasn't even a fade. It was just to the straight back of the end zone. Tyrod Taylor tried to throw it up. He was held. Bottom, like, there's no getting around that. Waller was held. There was the previous call that put them at the goal line was also a pass interference on Waller. So the refs, I guess, at this point, they're like, we gave the Giants a chance. We're not going to call a second holding on the Bills to give them another chance. It is what it is. The game is over. And it sucked. It sucked. It was like 2 seconds left. It was the last play of the game. They threw it up to Waller. He couldn't bring it down. He was held. It was a penalty. But at the same time, I hate that play call. I think the fact that you don't put the ball in Saquon Barkley's hands, like, has any offense, like, Dable, I think, is a good offensive play caller. He said, you know, there was that mistake towards the end of the half where the Giants, they ran the ball with like 5 seconds left, 6 seconds left, whatever it was, at the goal line. They tried to run the ball to score because they have not had a first half touchdown all year. Or like for whatever, 6 quarters, 7 quarters, 8 quarters, whatever it is. I don't know. I think it's all year. I think it's 12 first half, 12 quarters for all every first half. They haven't scored a touchdown yet. It's like the longest drought since 2004 for them. It's insanity. But they, honestly, actually, they haven't even scored a touchdown in 6 quarters, I think, is the actual stat. Basically, they can't put the ball in the end zone. So they tried to get the ball in the end zone, and Dable was freaking out. They had no timeouts. They couldn't spike the ball. So basically at the goal line, they don't get a touchdown and they don't get 3 points. Heading into the half, when they get the ball in the second half, going up 9-0 instead of 6-0, when you get the ball first in the second half is huge. It's such a huge difference. And Dable was like besides himself. And in the post-game press conference, he said that was not his call. That was Tyrod Taylor like audibling, which he couldn't believe. So just dysfunction that didn't happen last year, and now it's happening this year, and it's annoying. But overall, it's like the Giants, sometimes they look good, sometimes they looked awful. This was definitely a defensive game. I just thought that at the end, like, has no one learned from Pete Carroll? You know, it's like almost mind-boggling at this point where you're at the 1 yard line. You have an otherworldly running back. Like Saquon Barkley is a tremendous talent. One play, and you put it in your backup quarterback's hands and your tight end on the 1 yard line, no separation, just loft it up and hope he catches it. Like, I hate that. I hate that. I understand that maybe, like, you're worried about the Bills front, like if you show run and it is a run that they're just gonna beat you, and that's an understandable concern because the Giants offensive line is still like just flat out horrendous. But at the same time, like, that protection has to be this is for the game, bro. Like, give the ball to Saquon Barkley. If you're not gonna hand it off to him, at least run the play fake to him and let him try and leak out to the side, have him go to the flat in the right and have Waller, you know, sell that play action hard with a block and then disengage and leak out maybe to the left, you know, look right to Barkley. If they took it away there, then try and throw it up to Waller onto the left side of the end zone. Like, there are other ways to try and get these guys open. If I'm him, right, I run a hard play action with Barkley. He rolls out to the flat on the right, and then you have maybe you can try and get some type of rub route going on in the end zone where Waller crosses with Bellinger and he's open to the left, you could throw it to him then. If the immediate Barkley dump off isn't there, like there are other ways to scheme these guys open other than just snap, soft. I don't actually, was it even a play fake? Now I can't even remember if it was a play action or not, but giving the ball, letting Tyrod Taylor having to win that game for you to give it to Darren Waller on tight coverage. Like, I don't care if it was a penalty or not. I disagree with the play call entirely. There's just, I don't see why he did that. I really, really, really don't. I think the ball should have been in, it should have been drawn up. The final play should have been drawn up to Saquon Barkley. Whether you're able to get him the ball or not, and whether like the Bills take that away or not is another thing. Like, make them stop him. He's like, I could live with that. Putting the, if the play doesn't work out and you gave it to Saquon Barkley or you drew up a ball to Saquon Barkley and the Bills just made a good play, then you just kind of have to try and figure it out. But Barkley's your best player. He is your best offensive weapon. Like, give him the ball, bro. Give him the ball. No one learns from Pete Carroll. How are we still going on a decade of this and no one's fucking learned from this debacle that the Seahawks had in the Super Bowl? The biggest stage, everyone's watching. And you ran that play and everyone knows. Why did you not give the ball to Marshawn Lynch? That should apply to every game in the NFL if you have a great running back. Sorry. There's just, I mean, if you have like Dallas, for example. Dallas not giving Tony Pollard the ball at the 1 yard line when you have CeeDee Lamb is, that's one thing, right? Alexander Mattison on the Vikings, like not giving him the ball and trying to get Justin Jefferson the ball if he were healthy, hypothetically, that's understandable. Like, you draw up plays based on this kind of stuff, right? CeeDee Lamb's the best player on the Cowboys offense. Justin Jefferson's the best player on, you know, the Vikings. Patrick Mahomes, let him drop back and do anything he wants. That's the Chiefs. You have the ball in his hands. He's going to make, and Travis Kelce hit those receivers. Like, they're going to try and make something happen, but like, you're not going to hand it off to Clyde Edwards-Helaire or Isaiah Pacheco or Jerick McKinnon, whatever. You're going to let Mahomes drop back and try and make something happen because he can run in it as well. Like, this is what I'm saying here, you know? The Eagles and Jalen Hurts, you think they're passing on first and goal at the one? No, push. It's working 100%, 10 times out of 10. This is what I'm saying, man. Like, the ball has to be in the hands, or it's the ball, the play has to be schemed up to be in the hands of your best playmaker. All right, now we're working backwards. The London game, the Ravens win 24-16. The Titans continue to be horrific on the road, even though this technically was a home game for them. It's an international game. Doesn't really count as home field advantage. They continue to be bad on the road. A whopping 9 field goals made in this game between Nick Folk and Justin Tucker. Pretty outrageous. Only 2 touchdowns scored. One by Zay Flowers from Lamar Jackson, and then Derrick Henry, a 15-yard touchdown run. The Ravens, they're 4-2, but pretty gross. Pretty gross 4-2. Titans, they're 2-4. They play at home next week, which, let's see who they play real quick, because this might be just an instant smash. Yup. They are at home against the Falcons. Smash, 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 smash. The Titans. it would be crazy not to. That's my professional opinion. But the Ravens win this game 24-16. It was gross. It was dirty. You expected that from these two teams in this international game. Working our way down the list. Commanders, Falcons. The Commanders hand Desmond Ridder his first home loss from college to the pros. The Falcons are, like, really good at home, even though, like, you look at their record over the past few years and they're, like, not really a good football team. They win at home, but this was the first time you had the Commanders finally come in there, play a hard game, and they win 24-16. The Commanders and the Falcons are both 3-3. Curtis Samuel looked good. Terry McLaurin looked good. Drake London, 9 catches for 125 yards for Drake London. Desmond Ridder threw the ball 47 times. 47 times, Desmond, which is something I feel like I don't think we've ever seen that before from this Falcons offense, where they actually like cut Desmond Ridder loose and make him throw the football. But 3 interceptions from him. So maybe like throwing the ball 47 times with him isn't the best idea when he's turning the ball over 3 times in the air. Seahawks, Bengals, this, me and my friends had a big argument over how the end of this game happened. So now gambling may or may not had something to do with it, but you could take the gambling aspect out of it. Basically this game with 2 minutes, a little under 3 minutes left. It ends up being 2 minutes after the drive, but a little under 3 minutes left. You have third and goal at the Cincinnati 19. The Seahawks have the ball. We'll just say it's fourth and goal. Sorry. It's fourth and goal at the Cincinnati 6th. There's a little over 2 minutes left in the fourth quarter. The Seahawks have the ball. They elect to go for it to try and score a touchdown from the 6-yard line. I liked it. And one of my other friends liked it. We were like, this is what you got it. Like the Bengals outside of the first two drives where the Bengals had 2 touchdowns from Joe Burrow, they could do nothing the rest of the game. They scored 3 points the rest of the, 2 touchdowns in the first 2 drives, 3 points the rest of the game. Seahawks, likewise, not able to move the football. Bengals defense was really good on Sunday, and they had just 13 points total the entire game. So this is where we're at. It's 17-13 still at this point. Seahawks have the ball. My friend is screaming. He does have Seahawks plus 2.5, but he's saying kick the field goal. Kick the field goal. You have, I think at this point, the Seahawks still had at least 2 timeouts and the 2-minute warning. So he's saying, kick the field goal. The Bengals have been able to move the ball. Trust your defense. Use your timeouts. Use the 2-minute warning. And then you're going to be able to get back, then try and get back in the field goal range to win the game. That's his plan. Where I'm saying, and my other friend was saying, no, go for it's the right move here. The Bengals haven't been able to move the ball at all either. So go for the touchdown, score. That's easier than having to rely on your defense to make a stop and then get the ball back and then drive down the field to kick a field goal. It's easier now to score the touchdown and then just try and get a stop for your defense. Like that was the mindset. So you're looking at both ways, and I feel like it could go either way. The Seahawks do not get it. They don't get the conversion. They turn it over on downs at the Cincinnati 6. They give the ball back to the Bengals. And of course, my other friend who was opposing me and one of our other friends turns out to be right. Shout out, Riley. You were right. Because what happens when the Bengals get the ball back pinned inside their 10-yard line? 3 and out. They punt the ball back to the Seahawks, who then get back into field goal range. They get it. The Seahawks get it back all the way to the inside the Cincinnati 10. They get it to the Cincinnati 9 at 4th and 8 with 41 seconds left. And this is what he was saying, basically, because if you kick the field goal that first time instead of turning it over on downs, now it's 17-16. You stop the Bengals, it's a little different because if you don't turn the ball over to the Bengals there, then maybe, you know, they get the ball at their own 25 on the kickoff rather than being pinned inside or nearly at the 5-yard line, at their 6-yard line with a turnover on downs. That limits your play calling. Seattle can be a lot more aggressive. Whereas if you get the kickoff and now you're at the 25, you can kind of try and run a normal offense to run the clock out and try and pick up a first down to end this game. So the circumstances about where the Bengals start offensively and where how the Seahawks approach that defensively are two entirely different things. But bottom line here, as the Seahawks benefit I prematurely said he was right, because for me now it's like, you got the ball back. You're back in the red zone. If you're the Seahawks, you have a chance to score another touchdown to win the game. It still worked out for you. You had 2 cracks in the end zone and you couldn't get it. Now, to my friend's point, it's like if you kick the field goal and then hypothetically you stop, the defense prevails and they get the Bengals to go 3 and out anyway, then you can get back in the field goal range. Now here you are. Seattle kicks a field goal and they can win the game. But it's very much like based on circumstances. Because again, if Seattle doesn't turn the ball over on that penultimate drive, the Bengals aren't pinned inside their 10-yard line. You know, they aren't backed up to their own end zone. They're operating normally at the start at their 25-yard line with a lot of room to do things. Whereas with the end zone, you know, there's a certain offense that a team tries to run when you're backed up there. And the Seahawks can be extra aggressive, which they were. So it was a bit of a controversial ending in terms of what decisions to make. I don't mind Pete Carroll going for it. Because then they get the ball back and they try it again, but whatever. Seattle's 3-2. The Bengals are back to life, entering their bye week at 3-3. But they do come back on the 29th at San Francisco, which is pretty tough. But at least Joe Burrow gets to heal up on this bye week. He definitely, I mean, against the Cardinals, he looked very mobile. He looked good. Even against the Seahawks, he was moving around a little bit. Those first two drives were great for him and the Bengals offense. I don't know what happened after that, but they couldn't really do much of anything. Colts Jaguars, the big news coming out of this game, it has nothing to do with anyone that actually played. Anthony Richardson is likely to undergo surgery on his shoulder, I think it is, and that will most likely end his season. So, a promising start for the Colts. Cut down. Gardner Minshew had an outrageous amount of turnovers in this game. 3 interceptions for him. He looked absolutely horrible. Throwing the ball 55 times with Gardner Minshew, I'm sorry, is just not a recipe for success with Indianapolis. So they're going to have to figure out how to progress forward if they want to try and compete. Because they still are 3-3. Like, the AFC South is within reach for them right now, but obviously, the odds of them winning that division are not very good, considering they just lost Anthony Richardson, who, by the way, good quarterback. I think Anthony Richardson has all the tools to be a good quarterback. He just needs to play smarter, because he has not been playing smart so far in his very young career. He has not been playing smart football. A few of his injuries are on him. Like, he just sought out contact, and that's why he got hurt. The injury that ended up with his shoulder, the AC joint thing, that is most likely going to be the end of his season, was not his fault though. As for the Jaguars, Travis Etienne is just on fire. He has 4 touchdowns in the last 2 weeks. He has been, an absolute end zone threat for the Jaguars. Trevor Lawrence continues to be underwhelming for me. They scored 37 points, but Trevor Lawrence, just 20 of 30, 181 yards, 2 touchdowns and an interception for him. He underwhelms me. I am not as high on Trevor Lawrence as a lot of other people are. He is a good quarterback. I just think the Jags are a little bit overrated right now, and I just don't know if he's really like as good as everyone thinks he is. Again, good quarterback. Not saying he's bad by any stretch of it. I'm just saying, into where people hold him and to where I see him, there's a bit of a difference. That's all. Panthers, Dolphins. The Dolphins won this game 42-21 after being down 14-0. Again, I gamble, but obviously I'm not that smart, because the smartest play in that 1 o'clock window was when the Panthers were up 14-0, was to grab whatever line, whether it was money line you wanted to do or the spread, grab one of those in favor of the Dolphins and bet a lot on it, because there was just no way they were going to lose this game. And of course, that's exactly what happened. They had ended up having like 34 unanswered points at one time. So they end up winning 42-21. Not really much to say about this game. You know, the Panthers are 0-6. The Dolphins are 5-1. They're a wagon. Tyreek Hill is probably going to shatter 2,000 yards. He had 6 catches for 163 yards and a touchdown this game. Like, the dude is just flat out unstoppable. I would be shocked if he didn't break 2,000 yards to be the first ever. I would be shocked. Vikings, Bears. Justin Fields leaves this game with a broken thumb. He is doubtful for their next game Sunday against the Raiders. They had some undrafted undrafted rookie playing quarterback after he went down with an injury. The Bears are just in shambles. This game was gross. 19-13. The Vikings win. They're 2-4. They were unimpressive. KJ Osborne, 45 yards in the first half. Had one target in the second half. I don't know what happened to the Vikings passing game, but they seemed pretty resigned to just running the ball, wearing out the clock. After they got the lead, they were just like, this kid's not going to do much. So they win a gross game against the backup. Whatever, they're 2-4. Who cares about them? Their season's pretty much shot now that Justin Jefferson's going to be out for like 4 to 5 weeks, if they're lucky. Two huge upsets this week. This is one of them. The Niners losing to the Browns 19-17. The Niners and the Eagles, both the last two undefeated teams, they lost this week and are now both 5-1. The Niners, they struggled. Christian McCaffrey went out with an injury. Debo Samuel went out with an injury. Brock Purdy did not look good all game until the last drive of the game where he was able to make his accurate throws. His whole thing is that he's been incredibly accurate all year. And credit to the Browns defense. They are legit. They are probably they are a top three defense in this league. They are sensational on the defensive front. And just everything about this game, you know, PJ Walker's playing for the Browns. Deshaun Watson's out again. He's a loser. So PJ Walker is playing. He's keeping them in it. The Niners offense kind of looks in shambles, you know, and then again, McCaffrey goes out, Debo goes out. Now they're even worse off. So you kind of have to try and piece it together. Brock Purdy doesn't look totally comfortable. They're getting back to him. They're rushing him really well. And it's not until the last drive of the game where Purdy is able to lead them, the Niners, all the way down to the Cleveland 23-yard line. Ends up being a 41-yard field goal attempt for Moody, and he misses it right. So a chance after all that poor play, Brock Purdy puts you in a position to win this game on a field goal, 20-19, and Moody shanks it right. And the Niners suffer their first loss of the season. A total trap game by every stretch of the imagination. The Niners are 9.5-point favorites over the Browns in Cleveland against PJ Walker. Just a give me win. And the Browns defense kept them in the entire game. And with a little bit of luck at the end there on the field goal, they're able to win this game 19-17. Saints Texans, CJ Stroud throws his first, as many predicted, he throws his first interception against the Saints. And the reason why I say as many predicted is because the Saints defensively are very good and they like to throw different looks at you. They like to, you know, disguise blitz packages a ton. They like to disguise that they're blitzing and then they have people drop back in coverage. They like to really mix up their looks and try and confuse a quarterback. And for a rookie quarterback like Stroud, that would be extra effective against him. And his interception, of course, was when I think they basically just dropped back in coverage. Yeah, Bond at the 45, he picked it off. Actually fumbled the ball on the run back and the Texans recovered it. So the interception meant absolutely nothing. They lost like 3 yards and got a new set of downs. It was crazy. So his one interception didn't end up actually hurting them. But the Texans do win this game 20-13. I think Dennis Allen needs to be fired. This Saints offense is painful to watch. He either needs to be fired. I actually think he needs to be fired, but they also maybe need to fire the offense coordinator because this Saints offense is, with all their weapons, you know, with Derek Carr, who I shit on Derek Carr because I don't think he's very good, but he's not a bad quarterback. He could sling it. You know, they have Alvin Kamara back. Olave is a stud. You know, Shahid can be a gadget guy for them. He scored a touchdown that game. And they're just so bad. Like, look at these final stats from their leading guys. Carr threw 50 times, 32 of 50, 353 yards, a touchdown and interception. Kamara ran the ball 19 times for 68 yards, and Olave had 7 catches for 96 yards. They only put up 13 points. Like, what? Credit to D'Amico Ryans and that Texans defense. Will Anderson had a fantastic game. D'Amico Ryans is, he's proven to be a very good head coach so far. Stroud is legit. Nico Collins is legit. You know, you want to see maybe a little bit more from the running game with Singletary and Pierce. But other than that, like, the defense is a solid unit. Stroud looks good. They have solid receivers. They're 3-3. Like, no one expect them to be 3-3, and yet they are. So credit, all the credit in the world to them. But at the same time, the Saints, like, they are one of the most unappealing offenses to watch. They are painful. I mean, you have all this talent and you just, like, they can't score the freaking football, man. Just their points per game. They can't score 16 points week one, 20 points week two, 17 week three, 9 week four. And then they had the one outlier game was against the Patriots, where their defense had, like, I think a couple touchdowns. They went 34-0 that game. But then just 13 again the next week against the Texans. Like, they are not a good football team, man. It is really annoying. Now they're at home in the Superdome against the Jaguars on Thursday Night Football. So we'll see where they're at in that game. But I think it's going to be a gross game, I think. It really is. Raiders, Patriots. The Patriots continue to be horrible despite this late game push here. The Raiders win 21-17. Garoppolo out with a, I think it was a neck injury that happened. So Brian Hoyer had to come in and play the rest of the game. But Josh Jacobs, 25 carries, 77 yards, a big time step up for this Raiders defense. I think it was Max Crosby sacked Mac Jones in the end zone for a safety that ended up actually being the cover for the Raiders. They win 21-17 as 2.5-point favorites. So they were up 19-17. The safety made it 21. Shout out Max Crosby. I didn't bet on that game, but I know my friends did. So just a gross game in Vegas, but the Patriots lose again. They're 1-5. They're maybe the second worst team in football. Even the Giants, I would say, are, like, they're a bottom five team, but at least they showed some life against the Bills with a backup. Like, that was encouraging a little bit, you know? The Lions, they win 20-6 against Tampa Bay in Tampa Bay. 5-1. The Lions are legit. They are now tied with the Eagles and Niners with their losses atop the NFC with 5-1 records. Very, very encouraging for the Lions. Their defense played great this game. Goff threw for over 350 yards. He was sensational. Amon-Ra St. Brown is a top five wide receiver in the NFL. 12 catches, 124 yards, and a touchdown for him. David Montgomery did get injured in this game, so he's injured again, and he did leave. He did not return. So a big blow for them because Jahmyr Gibbs was already inactive. Ideally, he's ready to go next week if David Montgomery is going to miss more time. Cardinals, Rams. The Rams beat them badly, 26-9. Cardinals are 1-5. Rams are 3-3. Cooper Kupp is just doing Cooper Kupp things. 7 catches, 148 yards, and a touchdown for Cooper Kupp. Kyren Williams ran all over the place. 20 carries, 158 yards, and a touchdown for Kyren Williams. So this Rams offense was just all kinds of motoring and just hammered the Cardinals. The second biggest upset of the day, the Jets, the New York Jets, with just 4 starting active cornerbacks. Reed was out. Sauce was out. They had a couple guys missing defensively. They had just 4 starting active cornerbacks, and they came to play. Jalen Hurts, 3 interceptions, including the late one to Bryce Hall, who picked it off and returned it deep into Eagles territory. The Eagles then, quote unquote, allowed the Jets to score on a Bryce Hall run. So the Jets ended up going up 20-14 late. And then the Eagles could not make it happen. I think they actually got, did he get picked off again at the end of the game there to seal it? Well, I think actually maybe, no, they didn't, because the Jets ended up just making it. The Jets just held out. They held out at the end of the game, broke up a deep pass by Hurts, and they ended up winning this game 20-14, a sensational win. Sensational win for the New York Jets. If their red zone offense figures it out, they are going to win football games with Zach Wilson. Like, that is the only thing with the Jets, that they get inside the red zone and their offense, like, they can have the best drive in the world. As soon as they get inside that 20-yard line, their offense just completely collapses. They cannot convert red zone trips into touchdowns. They keep settling for field goals. Luckily for them, their defense was on another level. I think Jalen Hurts was playing really dumb football. And likewise, I think Nick Sirianni was playing really dumb football. I don't know what the Eagles were doing, but their insistence up in this game, 14-12, because they, after the Jets scored that touchdown, they went for two just cause. Just because it wouldn't have made a difference either way. The Eagles were going to have to score a touchdown to win this game. So they just went for two just because, I guess, I don't know. Again, didn't really make a difference. But the Eagles' insistence on passing the football, like, I understand that was probably their game plan coming in. Like, we're going to make big plays, which they did. AJ Brown had a great game. But we're going to make plays. You know, they have a banged up secondary. We're going to try and take advantage. But then at the end of the game, you're up and you're continuing to pass the football when you could probably just run it and waste as much time as possible. You continue to pass the football and the Jets keep making play after play after play to get the ball back to their offense. And then that deadly one, again, that pass from Hurts, it's jumped by Bryce Hall. He picks it off, runs it back deep, and the Jets ended up scoring. That's the game right there. So I have no idea, like, This is the play. This is the play-by-play for the Eagles in the fourth quarter. They have the ball, 4:43 left in this game. Pass completed. Run. Pass again. First down. There's a first down now at the Philly 33. It's first and 10, 3:55 left. They run it. No gain. Timeout by Philadelphia at 2:32. I don't know why. Might have been an injury timeout. Third and 7 at the Eagle 34. Pass to Goddard. Completed. 2:32 left. Right now, it's first down. First down, you have. It's first down at the Eagle 45. There's 2:24 left. The Jets have not started using their timeouts yet. They run the ball to Gainwell, 1 yard. Jets use the first timeout with 2:20 left. They run the ball again with Swift. No gain. Second and 9 at the 46. 2:20 left. Jets use their second time. They used the 2-minute warning. They let it run down to the 2-minute warning. Third and 9 with 1:50 left at the Eagle 46-yard line. Why are you not running this football? Why are you not running this football? They pass it. It's intercepted by Tony Adams. I was saying Bryce Hall, by the way. He had a big pick. But Tony Adams was the one who picked it off at the end of the game. Sorry, my apologies to Tony Adams. Tony Adams was the one who picked it off at the end of the game and returned it inside the Eagles' 10-yard line, where the Jets then ran it in to score. So I don't understand. Because honestly, you're up 14-12 at this point. Run the ball. Make the Jets use their timeouts. I think they still had one left. So make the Jets use that timeout, punt the ball, pin them inside their 20, 15, ideally, if you can. Make them drive the length of the field with a minute and a half left and no timeouts. Do you really think Zach Wilson is capable of that? And no disrespect, Zach Wilson's been playing really well, in my opinion, for the Jets. Like, he's playing well enough for them to win football games. But, like, game on the line, less than 2 minutes, no timeouts, drive down the length of the field to get in the field goal range for the Jets. I don't know if I trust him to do that. How can you have like it's a bad coaching decision. It was a bad coaching decision, and Jalen Hurts played one of his worst games I've seen since maybe his like rookie year, second year in the league, when he was still trying to figure it out. It's been a while since I've seen him play that poorly. It's been a while, like bad throws and bad decisions made by him. The Monday Night Football game, a colossal win for the Dallas Cowboys after getting absolutely steamrolled on Sunday night by the San Francisco 49ers. They stay on the West Coast. They play the Los Angeles Chargers, and they beat them in LA 20-17. Justin Herbert played horrible in this game. Just flat out was bad. He missed Keenan Allen two times on a sluggo route, slant and go route. Keenan Allen, I think it was Bland, was covering Keenan Allen, torched him both times on a sluggo route, and Herbert missed him twice. It would have, if he puts it on him, it's most likely a touchdown, if not a colossal gain for the Chargers offense. He missed him twice. He missed several throws. He did not look great. Austin Eckler didn't really do much in his return. The Chargers offense just looked stagnant. The Cowboys defense, credit to them for playing really well on Sunday night. Dak Prescott looked great. He played a really, really crisp game, made a lot of plays with his legs, extending plays, running for first downs. CeeDee Lamb had a great game. Tony Pollard, this rushing attack for the Cowboys is just not really working right now. This is maybe the third game in a row where Tony Pollard has not really done much. Definitely the second game in a row. I think it extends past that 49ers game, though. But he hasn't really done much. I would like Brandon Staley to be fired. I will say it every week. I'll say it every week, bro. I think he should be fired. Like, he's not a good head football coach. He's not. You know, he's supposed to be he was coming in. He was supposed to be this, like, chosen one prophecy guru for defensive coordinators when he was with the Rams, came in, and now, like, the Chargers defense is not good. Michael Davis, number 43, got torched literally the entire game. He was getting absolutely smoked. The Chargers are playing like soft zone and man coverage, soft coverage, and CeeDee Lamb is just ripping off like 10 to 15 yards at a time every time he touched the ball. The schemes were really mind-bogglingly stupid from the Chargers. I don't know why they kept doing this, but it allowed CeeDee Lamb to have a great game. Dak Prescott, again, he played really well. This is a after coming off that ass-whooping from the Niners, this is a huge win for the Niners. But I think the Chargers, ironically enough, they played the Jags in the playoffs last year, but I put them both in those same tier of categories where they're like, they're good football teams. I don't think they're necessarily bad football teams, and they don't have bad quarterbacks. They're good football teams with good quarterbacks that I think everyone else just elevates to a level that they're not at. I don't think they're, like, those two teams are not up there with the Eagles, the Chiefs, the Niners. Honestly, even the Lions are just more well-rounded at this point than both of those guys. I'm not saying Jared Goff is better than Trevor Lawrence or Justin Herbert, although this year he is definitely playing better than both of them. But generally speaking, those teams are better, like the Chiefs. I said the Bills. Even though they struggled against the Giants and they kind of been a little bit wonky, and the Jaguars did beat them. The Jaguars beating the Bills in London is an asterisk because the Jaguars were there for back-to-back weeks. The Bills still had to deal with like the jet lag and all that kind of stuff. And they were not, usually when you go to London, both teams travel at the same time. They both have to deal with that. So it's kind of even. That was not the case. I don't think the Jaguars are better than the Bills, even though they beat them. I think you put them in Buffalo or you even put them in Jacksonville, the Bills are beating them. So whatever. I think, you know, there are some things like that. Like, again, good quarterbacks, Trevor Lawrence and Justin Herbert, good teams, Jaguars and Chargers. I think people put them a little bit too high. All right, that'll do it for the NFL recap for this week. Week 6, we have the rest of the MLB playoffs. We might, honest, the way these series are going, by next week, we might have our World Series matchup set. If this trend continues, if the trajectory of these series continues, it will be the Texas Rangers and the Philadelphia Phillies. That's me knocking on wood because I don't want to jinx either of these teams. I want fair, even playing ground. I don't want to jinx either one of them and give their opponents an edge. But right now you have the Phillies up 1-0. You have the Rangers up 2-0. The Phillies play tonight when this episode has been released. So we have the rest of the week. We might have a World Series matchup unless, you know, the Astros and the Diamondbacks are able to rally and push these games to game six or seven, then, you know, we might have our matchup by next week. Thursday night football, as I mentioned, it is Saints and Jaguars that I'm going to pick. Even though I just said all that stuff about the Jaguars, I would pick them to win this game. I would be shocked if they didn't. The Saints, like I said, the Superdome is not the Superdome anymore. It's not like this crazy home field advantage for New Orleans because they're just not that same high-octane offense that they were in the golden age of Drew Brees and Sean Payton. Just not the case. Speaking of Sean Payton and the Broncos, they played the Chiefs on Thursday night, and the Chiefs won 19-8. Those AFC West matchups are always kind of sloppy, even though the Chiefs are like a superior team by a large margin. Those games kind of always get a little sloppy. But a crazy stat, the Broncos have not beaten the Chiefs since Peyton Manning was their quarterback. And Patrick Mahomes has never lost to Denver since he was the starting quarterback of Kansas City. So we're looking at, 2015, 2016? 7 years since the Broncos beat the Chiefs? No matter what. Even if there were backups playing in that game, what have you, whatever. Haven't beaten them since Peyton Manning was their quarterback. Not great. So just to backtrack, Thursday night, Jags, Saints, I'm probably taking the Jags. New Orleans opened as a -3 favorite, so I would definitely take the Jags at +3, +3.5, whatever it is. This line might go down. I can't imagine people are not going to take the Jaguars on that. So it might go end up by the time Thursday comes around, it might be 1.5. But anyway, that'll do it for this episode from my point of view. Thank you all very much for listening. I appreciate you as always. Have a great rest of your week, and I will talk to you all next Tuesday. I can't hear you. You sound like static. I can't hear you. My ears have had it bad. You sound like a radio with the speakers blown. Double high in the bass down low. Down low. Tonight I'm drowning in my favorite records. Trying to forget how every thread.